Hello and welcome to the Euromoney Conference's online podcast for the Thursday, the 6th of March, 2014. We're recording this in Bahrain. It's our first ever out of the studio podcast. We're recording it at around lunchtime on the 5th, just as we're in the closing sessions of our 2014 Euromoney Bahrain Conference, which of course we previewed last week. I'm joined today by two of our speakers and guests at the conference. First of all, by Mazen Manna, who heads the city business here in Bahrain. Hello, Mazen.
Hi, Richard.
And also by Hassan Haider, who is the CEO of Tenmu. Tenmu, as I'm sure you will all know, is Bahrain's first business angels company. And we'll talk to Hassan in a minute. But I'm going to start with Mazen. Mazen, we've just really completed 2 days of talk on Bahrain, on the region, and indeed on the global economy. Just put us in a little picture from Citi's point of view about where the Bahraini economy is going to be going this year. Is the situation improving? Do we see GDP growing? Do we see the sectors that the government has prioritized doing what they should be doing?
I think the Bahrain economy has been growing over the last 2-3 years at an annual rate of about 2.8% in terms of real GDP. This year, the expectation is that the GDP would grow by about 4.5%, which I think is healthy. At the same time, we've seen a growth in the retail bank deposits by around 18% this year. And CDS levels for the country have gone back down to about 210 levels, which are very close to where they were back in 2010, just before February events in Bahrain. So overall, the economic indicators for the country are good. There's high liquidity. The banks are well capitalized. And there's an anticipation that there are a number of government projects that will come on stream over the next couple of years, which should help hopefully to deploy some of this liquidity that is out there in the market.
2.8 last year, 4.5 this year. Why is there that difference?
The 2.8 is the average growth over the last few years.
Right.
Last year was just under 4%.
Right. Okay.
4.5% this year. I think the government has been undertaking expansionary, fiscal policy, spending a lot of money on infrastructure, this has spurred economic growth in the economy, and we expect that with the projects that are planned for the country, which we estimate will cost about $10 to $15 billion over the next few years, that should give further impetus to the Bahrain economy.
Let's look at those projects. I mean, first amongst them is the refinery. Yes,
yes.
Am I right on that?
Yes.
And can you talk a little bit to that and tell us a little? I mean, do you want to talk a little bit about that project, because that in itself is about $6 billion, isn't it?
Yes, it's a major upgrade and expansion of the existing refinery in Bahrain. So it'll take up the capacity, nearly double the capacity of the existing refinery, and the cost of that is about, as you mentioned, $5 to $6 billion, which in a in the context of this market is a and probably any other market. Is quite a large project to be undertaken. And we expect that all sources of financing will be used to fund this project, whether it's ECAs, bonds, loans, Islamic finance. We're hopeful that this should come on stream in the next couple of years.
You mentioned the sources of financing. I met with the BAPCO people, BAPCO being the company that's charged with it, a few months ago, and they were they were saying that they felt that the majority of it would have to come from ECAs, that the domestic system could put in, you know, there would be equity, there would be local bank debt, there would be some maybe some securities involved in it, but that the vast majority was is going to come from ECAs. Do you, as a banker, do you see that that's an accurate view of the structure of the deal?
Well, you know, I don't know enough about the project at this stage to be able to comment, but I would suspect that a big part of it will come from ECAs, but there will also be, I think, room for fixed income securities, so capital markets issuance, whether it's in the conventional format or Sukuk format. I would suspect that the loan part of it will probably be, you know, smaller part of the overall equation, but clearly ECAs and bonds, I think, will play a significant role.
And what else, what other projects are? I mean, that's six of the 15 billion, if you say that. Yeah. So that leaves nine left on the table or thereabouts. What are the main areas that the government is focusing on?
Well, there's an expansion of ALBA, the aluminum smelter in Bahrain. So there's the sixth pot line, which again should be in the vicinity of $1.72 billion, about $2 billion. There's an expansion that's being undertaken by GPIC, which is again another $1.7 billion.
That's in the petrochemicals space.
You know, there's a pipeline that's being built from Saudi Arabia for the refinery. So if you put this all together, there are other smaller projects that are being talked about, a new LNG terminal that Sheikh Hamad was just talking about as we came in. So you put this all together, you know, we are talking about significant expenditure over the next few years.
And we should see those projects beginning to, you know, be in, not in the market, at least the initial conversations with financiers, we should see that tail end of this year, tail end 2014, beginning of 2015? What should the market look for?
That should be, I think, towards the end of this year, as you mentioned, beginning of last year, beginning of next year. 2015, for the BAPCO refinery. And some of the other projects may actually happen probably even earlier than this. So some of the discussions on the LNG terminal, et cetera, may actually occur before that.
Bahrain, for those of you who are listening who are not intimately familiar with it, Bahrain would be importing LNG, not exporting.
Yes, importing LNG, yes.
And power generation and petrochemicals.
For power generation, for some of the projects that are going to be undertaken, which would require...
Which really led to my next question, the big question for petrochemicals, for refineries, of course, is feedstock. Now, the feedstock for the refinery is from Saudi. I mean, it's all from the shared resources of the kingdom, the two kingdoms. Is that right?
Yeah, it's, some of it comes through the kingdom, from the kingdom, and gets processed in Bahrain and refined in Bahrain.
Now, Bahrain was the first financial sector center in this region, established on the wave of petrodollars of the 1970s. It was really very much ahead of the curve. Where's Bahrain now? Where does it fit into that universe?
My view is that clearly Bahrain, as you mentioned, pioneered many years ago in with things like offshore banking, Islamic finance. Today continues to have a sound regulatory system and a sound banking system with about 400 institutions still operating, financial institutions still operating in the country. Now, going forward, clearly there's a lot more competition from other centers and I'd suspect that different countries would have to look at their competitive advantages and start working to develop them and create their own niches. so that they can take this forward. But I think there is room, as we've seen in other places around the world, for more than one financial center in the region. And I think, you know, this competition is always healthy and should help to grow and promote the the financial services industry in the region.
Mazen, thank you very much for those comments and that overview. It's great to have you here with us, and thank you also for being part of the conference. I'm now going to turn to our second guest, who is Hassan Haider, as I said, CEO of Tenmu. If you want to look up on the web as to who Tenmu are, it's www, as always, .tenmu, T-E-N-M-O-U, .me. And we'll put that on somewhere on the website, our website, so that you can see that. I don't need to give you Citi's web address. I think you can probably work that out for yourself. Hassan, welcome. Just give us a quick, bird's eye view of Tenmu and who you are and what you do, and then we'll go from there.
So Tenmu is the first business angels organization that was set up here in Bahrain. The region as a whole doesn't have much of a culture in terms of angel investment or even risk capital and venture capital. So about 3 years ago, we got a group of dedicated investors who said, listen, we want to do this, but we want to do it our way. So we figured out what that way was. And so we set up Tenmu. It's the first business angels company in the world, I think. We've managed to mush together a lot of the different institutions that exist around the world. So we have a fund of about $3 million committed from 14 private sector individuals, high net worth individuals here in Bahrain, as well as two semi-governmental organizations. One is the Bahrain Development Bank, and the other is ALBA. So our whole objective is to invest in and mentor the next generation of high potential Bahraini entrepreneurs, and that's what we do. So we invest at the seed stage right at the beginning. Someone comes to us with an idea, and we help them from there to get it to where it needs to be. And that's a bird's eye view of Tenmu. And
you say you're the first business angels company in the world. How does that work? I mean, everyone who's listening to this, I think, will know in principle what a business angel is. I know what a business angel is. But how does, what does a corporate structure bring to the table? Why is it a different way of doing it than normal?
So our investors here are more comfortable with corporate structures. They understand how companies run. And so they said, listen, we don't want you to come to us every time and say, listen, I've got this deal and everyone pitch in or don't pitch in. That's how angel networks work around the world. Someone presents and then people decide to invest or not invest. They're like, in the region, give us a chance and we probably won't invest in any of the deals you bring to us. So we said, okay, fine. And we decided to, everyone pitches in their money, sets up this company with a management team, and then we do initial filtration. So we get about, for every batch that we invest in, we get about 150 applicants from Bahrain alone. We do initial sort of filtering down to the top 20, 25. And then the investors themselves get a chance to see the entrepreneur's pitch. And then it goes on a consensus basis. Whichever investors are in the room, they decide, okay, this entrepreneur goes through or not. And then they don't have to write a check every time because the money is already in the account. So that's one of the processes we've done. So we still have the angels investing as a personal basis, so they're still there. But it's the group's capital that's committed that goes into any of these businesses.
How do you attract? I mean, you give some nice numbers there. It was more than 100 applications or submissions for every time you do a round. How do you find these people? How do they find you? How do you communicate to them that you exist?
So basically, we're the only organization in Bahrain that does seed stage equity financing. No one else does. There's a big focus. There has been a big focus over the past few years of debt financing for SMEs and all of that sort of stuff. But debt isn't the right way to finance high potential startups. So equity is the best way to start that. So whenever I go, I speak at entrepreneurship events. I go to very targeted sort of things. We have a social media presence and all these sort of things. Sure. And it gives us targeted marketing towards the people who are interested and actually they've got a concept. And then they're like, actually, yes, equity makes more sense than debt.
So tell us about some of the investments that you've made and some of them that you're considering. I mean, what type of projects and ideas are brought to you?
So at the seed stage, the most important thing is to invest in the entrepreneurs themselves. The idea comes secondary. So we look for a combination of both. We look for high potential entrepreneurs with the passion, the drive, and determination to succeed. And then we look at concepts which are new and don't exist in the market that have the potential to scale and grow outside of Bahrain. Bahrain is the perfect test bed for any companies if they want to go attack the MENA region as a whole. Mm. Come to Bahrain. It's a small market, but it'll show whether your concept will succeed
it's
or
brilliant.
Not.
You keep answering my next question before I'm about to ask it, which is fantastic. I was going to say, why Bahrain? But let's stick back to that. I mean, give us some concrete examples.
So from the most recent batch, probably I'll talk about, we have these guys. They're from fishermen families. Bahrain has always been a fishing and trading hub, and their families were fishermen, but they're the younger generation. So they're like, listen, we want to stick to what we're doing, but we want to do it differently. So they set up something called Fish Transporter. Their marketing is very much, this is what we do. So they transport fish. They they go to the central market. They know the fishermen, and they know the quality of the fish. They make sure it's fresh, and they deliver it to you on the same day. So it's not something that you would have anywhere else in the world. Bahrain, as an island, we eat a lot of fish. So they've had a lot of people come, and people are lazy. So rather than them going to the fish market, then these guys come and deliver it to them. So they're passionate. They're determined. The idea by itself, anyone else could have come up with it. But because these guys have the passion for fresh fish, they want to make sure that the customers are happy and all that sort of stuff. So that's one of the things that we've sort of invested in.
Which brings me on. I mean, we'll maybe come back and talk about some of the other things that you've invested in. But, you know, I completely understand why you're, you know, as it were, investing in a person rather than a project. But how do you determine and evaluate whether someone is really passionate or just a good salesman?
So it's difficult. It's not the easiest thing in the world. But we have a series of interviews that we sort of do. So when someone applies online, we have an initial coffee shop sort of meeting with them, very casual, and we buy them a nice coffee, so at least they don't lose out on that. And we narrow them down to the top 25 after seeing the personalities of the entrepreneurs. Then the investors have experience. They've invested with companies, they've hired people, they have all of this experience, so they actually can apply and say, this guy is going to do well, and this guy has the passion. So there's two other presentations that the entrepreneurs need to do, and you see it, the filtration of the entrepreneurs, the ones that are just there to sell their idea and the ones that really have the passion for it.
And how many, I mean, you know, the VC or you know, early stage seed investment business is a risky one. I mean, most ventures.
Yeah.
That's nothing to do with Bahrain. That's just general.
It's worldwide.
Fail.
Yeah.
How many failures have you had?
So we've not had any complete failures yet.
Okay. How many sort of restructurings and reinvisaging of the business plans have you had, if you don't call
so
them?
So we've got about 3 out of 18,
right,
which are in that sort of phase of restructuring the business, and right, we need to see what's going to happen next.
That's not bad. And the rest of them are in?
The rest of them are either cash flow positive, so they're okay, they don't need another round of investment or anything, they can survive as is, or they're generating revenues, or they're still working on their products going forward. So there's a.
But well, I mean, I want to, you know, again, let's put a little bit of sort of color into this. I mean, you know, so you have, you know, more than, let's say, 15 or so companies that are operating, and these are coming in primarily young entrepreneurs, young Bahraini entrepreneurs. Let's look at some of the other investments. You've got a fish transporter. Do you have things in the technology sector?
Yeah, so we do. I like the fish guys because I don't eat fish, but we still invested in them, which is funny. But
so they can't even bribe you with giving you a free fish.
But they bribed my wife. She was one of the first people to order from them. But then we have this company called Utrack.tv, and what they do is they cover motorsports events live. So you can watch a drift race or karting events or all these sort of things directly on your phone or iPad or things, wherever you are. They've actually gotten a lot of acceptance from Saudi, the UAE. People are calling them, come and cover our event. So what they're doing is they're covering niche events that usually wouldn't have coverage on TV, but there are fans of them, and so they stream it live. And so they've got this van that they drive from Bahrain to Saudi. It's from Saudi to the UAE. They sleep in the van sometimes, and they're really motivated.
And the revenue model for that?
So the revenue model is there's a couple of different models. One is that anyone who wants their event to be covered, they pay them a fee to cover the event. The other is that they would cover the event and then split any advertising revenues. You can put advertising spots in the actual feed itself. So that's another model as well. And there's a couple of others, but those are the two basic models that they're going for. Sure.
And you know, getting to the other end of the spectrum, as it were, in terms of your exit. So how do you? I think have you exited any investments? And if you haven't, what is your preferred exit strategy?
So it's difficult in the region as a whole. There isn't really much of an equity funding life cycle. So we've started at the seed stage, but there's no VCs. Well, there's maybe a handful of VCs in the region, but none of them have more than $20 or $30 million in assets. It's difficult because the life cycle isn't there. So what we've tried to do is we've tried to replace the equity funding life cycle that exists in the rest of the world with the family offices and the investors themselves and things like that. So we've had there's one exit that's in the pipeline now, but it's still difficult. So what we've seen is there is a gap in the whole region. We need VCs. We need a MENA-focused VC fund with substantial sort of investment capability. And so that's one of the things we need to explore.
Yeah. I mean, well, the VC fund people would say, well, we need to have these seed opportunities that, you know. You're building it, genuinely building.
Yeah.
It's fascinating, and I think it's something that we'll keep our eyes on over the next few years. I'm sure it's something that people in our other conferences in Saudi and Kuwait, Qatar and elsewhere will be interested in. So Hassan, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm going to draw this week's podcast to a close. I'm going to say that you should visit us at euromoneyconferencesonline.com, that you should register for there. Registration is free. You should follow us on Twitter at euromoneyconf. And you should definitely download next week's podcast as well as this one. Next week, we are in the white heat of news gathering, going to be talking about Ukraine and Russia. Our Russia editor is currently in Russia, and he'll be back, I hope, next week, Chris Ostrowski, and he'll be joining me and maybe another guest to talk about what's going on there. And what we see as the outcome of current unpleasantness in the Black Sea region. So thank you very much for listening, and I hope you join us next week.